A swift transition between worlds. That is how I experience the start of a research dive into the ocean, when I roll backwards from the gunwale of a small boat and, for a second, my vision traces an arc across the sky that culminates inside a burst of white bubbles. And then, the transparency, or murkiness, of the underwater world. The air trapped within my dry suit bobs me up to the surface, but only briefly. As I press the air release valve, my buoyancy steals away, and I sink. That is the instant when all heaviness vanishes, the weight of my tank and other gear, of my body itself, and perhaps my mind too. I am now free to plummet, float in place, spin, rise, to act as if the very existence of gravity has been suspended. And maybe, just before I plunged into the water, the wind or boat engines were loud. Maybe wolf howls from the nearby forest pierced the air. Whatever the sounds were above the surface, they are now gone, replaced by the rhythm of my own breathing. I always pause to acknowledge this transformation, this shift in perspective that allows me to access a unique freedom of the body and the mind. I soak it in so that it may stay with me throughout the busyness I'm about to face when surveying rockfish, a genus of long-lived marine fish that are easy to overexploit and culturally significant to indigenous peoples who live along the coast of the Northeast Pacific Ocean. The surveys are part of the long-term and collaborative research I conduct with four First Nations along the central coast of what is known as British Columbia in Western Canada. The ancestral territories of these indigenous groups are made up of lush, temperate rainforests and vertical granite walls that rise from a rich ocean to become corrugated mountains, where you can stand on a glaciated peak and look, almost straight down, into estuaries and rivers where the white-coated spirit bear, which is found nowhere else in the world, and other predators, grizzly bears, wolves, and wolverine, feed seasonally on large numbers of spawning salmon. These animals scatter fish carcasses among tall Sitka spruces that are nurtured by the decomposing flesh, linking the high seas that fed the salmon with forests that sustain myriad species of birds, insects, plants, lichens, and fungi. And if standing on that peak, you raise your gaze slightly and the day happens to be clear, you will see fjords give way to islands large and small. Some mountainous and heavily forested, some flat and strewn with bogs and ponds that resemble the subarctic, some little more than windswept rocks where seabirds nest and sea lions haul themselves out to rest. The islands extend far out to sea, sparkling in the sun amidst the breaking waves of the Northeast Pacific. I am the ecologist and science coordinator for the Central Coast Indigenous Resource Alliance, which the Owikanu, Heitsuk, Newhalk, and Kitisu Heihe First Nations have created to join forces in the proactive management of resources within their territories. Our studies of rockfish and other marine organisms, including Pacific herring and Dungeness crabs, are part of an effort to support conservation and fishery management by cultures that are both grounded in ancient traditions and very much part of the modern world. While contemporary life has brought opportunities to these coastal cultures, it has also brought challenges. These include rapid climate changes that reassemble biological communities into unprecedented configurations of species, industrial fisheries that carry off vast amounts of fish very quickly, and logging, which has destroyed parts of the rainforest and clogged some near-shore ecosystems with wooden debris that smother marine life and deplete life-sustaining oxygen dissolved in seawater. Yet, the notion of managing people's behavior in the face of the human potential to destroy ecosystems is not new to many Indigenous friends and colleagues. Their tradition has always recognized our destructive capacity and, more importantly, our power to preempt it.